A former Justice Department lawyer recently pleaded guilty to stealing sealed whistleblower records before he joined a private law firm. He offered to sell them to their targets but got caught, and the case illustrates how precarious whistleblowers can still be, despite several recent laws to protect their rights. Joining me with more, Liz Hempowitz, Director of Public Policy at the Project on Government Oversight. Ms. Hempowitz, good to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
The significance of this case, besides a former justice lawyer being a thief and trying to sell documents he didn't have a right to on the surface, your feeling is that it sends a message to whistleblowers below the surface.
Absolutely. I think in the most generous read of this, it should send a chilling message to whistleblowers. I think, you know, the people who come forward in the federal government to disclose fraud, waste, abuse, and illegality are already taking a chance. And they're doing so because they think it's their duty and they want things to improve at the agency, within the agency. And it's, you know, instances like this or, you know, overzealous prosecution of whistleblowers and retaliatory actions against whistleblowers that continually work against kind of the public narrative that we've seen in the last few years that is, you know, that everybody and, you know, even the president is saying that, you know, whistleblowers are important and we celebrate them and we encourage them to come forward. But you know, the writing is on the wall, really. It's dangerous to come forward as a whistleblower.
Whistleblower law has changed somewhat in the last couple of years because of some reform legislation. Just briefly review for us what's different now, say, than a few years ago.
Right. So I think one very significant change is that now across the federal government, for the most part, you know, I will give my little caveat here that there are different whistleblower laws and different protections for different areas of government. And so unless I specify that I'm talking about the FBI or the military, or the VA, I'm referring to just regular, like, Title V protection. So that's the majority of federal employees, but not all of them. So across the board in Title V and also in the VA, one of the most significant reforms is that when a supervisor is found to have retaliated against a whistleblower, there is now mandatory punishment for that supervisor. So what we had been seeing previously is that, you know, a whistleblower would have their claim substantiated. They, you know, they revealed good information. They were retaliated against, and they could prove that they were retaliated against. And then it was up to the agency's discretion whether or not to do anything in terms of how to handle the supervisor or the one who was retaliating. And often what our experience has been is that the way the agencies and offices would deal with them would be to promote them out of the office. And so remove them from the chain of command with that individual. But that's, you know, a promotion is not a punishment. And so now there's a mandatory 3-day suspension, I believe, for the first instance. And then for the second, I think it can go all the way up to removing that supervisor from their position. So that's really significant because, you know, even if a whistleblower does everything right and prevails against the system, then, you know, to see that individual who was retaliating against them kind of rewarded for this behavior doesn't send the right message.
Sure.
And it also doesn't really go towards changing the culture within an agency where it's much easier to go after an individual than it is to make systemic reform. So that's really significant. There are a few other things, but I think that is one of the biggest that we've been able to see.
Now, in the case of this Jeffrey Wirtgen character who did leave the Justice Department, the sealed files he took from whistleblowers, he somehow got his hands on these. So that's a problem for justice, is to make sure that it's almost like evidence the integrity has to be maintained.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, what this points to is kind of a broader problem that we've been pointing out the last few years. There's, you know, as I'm sure you know, within the intelligence community, there's this insider threat program that is meant to kind of root out problem employees that, you know, are either going to remove classified information or do something within their sensitive position that would maybe cause harm to the U.S. One thing that we've been concerned about since the inception of this program a few years ago under President Obama, former President Obama, is that it would be used to unfairly target whistleblowers and try to identify them as, you know, quote unquote insider threats. And we have kind of seen that happening, but what we haven't seen happening is that program identifying actual insider threats like this attorney who was taking these files and misusing them.
But he had no trail, no activity, no reason to give concern or suspicion before
right,
he did
it. This is exactly the kind of thing that this program is meant to be capturing, and it's not. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've been so skeptical about what this, you know, what the benefit of this program is in the first place.
Sure. We're speaking with Liz Hempowitz, Director of Public Policy at the Project on Government Oversight. Given a whistleblower claim that comes to, I guess, first to one supervisor before going maybe to the IG, what's a good practice for supervisors to be able to act on them fairly without totally disrupting operations about which the whistleblower might have made a claim?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, a responsible supervisor will first look at the allegation and see, you know, whether or not they have been provided with enough information to act on it. And if not, kind of, you know, work with that individual, if they know who it is, work with that individual and try to figure out if they do kind of have that paper trail or that evidence that shows that there is wrongdoing. And if not, then elevate that case to the Inspector General or the Office of Special Counsel that has the ability, you know, has more investigative authority than most supervisors do.
Because sometimes whistleblowers may have a disagreement over policy or execution, but it's not necessarily waste, fraud, or abuse.
Right. Well, that is a more tricky area of the law. So the Whistleblower Protection Act and the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act specifically carve out from protected disclosure a disagreement on policy. There is an exception to that exception, and that is when there is an identifiable threat to public health or safety at stake. But that's, you know, a small subset of these policy disagreements. So one thing that we see is there are a few agencies that have internal channels for policy disputes, like the State Department. And we encourage agencies to have these, and I think we've been having conversations about whether or not it would make sense to kind of replicate that system across the federal government, because we do think there is some benefit to having a place where you can go and file a policy disagreement. Most civil servants are career civil servants. They've been in these agencies for decades. And so it's not like a policy disagreement is just them shooting from the hip. It's usually based off, you know, decades of service and understanding the policy goals of the agency.
What's your feeling about KETAM, where the person that blows the whistle can get a portion of the settlements? Is that a two-edged sword?
You know, I think there are a lot of critics of KETAM, and maybe it's not a perfect system, but I don't really see a huge problem in that. I think, you know, those kinds of suits are able to recover millions of dollars for the government. And so if a small portion of that goes towards, you know, towards the individual who took a personal risk to bring those cases forward, I don't have a huge problem with that.
Because you do read about the big, big payoffs, but those are pretty rare in the scheme of things, and
right,
they take
and
about 10 years sometimes before
right,
someone gets the money.
Exactly. You have to think about kind of the risk, the personal risk that individuals take when they come forward to blow the whistle. You know, they put their careers at risk, their standing in their professional community is at risk. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes that often doesn't make it into those stories. We did see over the last year kind of an increase in federal employees reaching out to us to find out proactively what are their rights and what channels they can go through and what are the laws around whistleblowing disclosures, and trying to be proactive to figure that out. And so we have begun as an organization offering these trainings if a federal employee asks us for it. We've also created some resources on our website. There's a Know Your Rights portal made for federal employees to kind of, you know, go through and see what is a protected disclosure, what isn't a protected disclosure, you know, what First Amendment rights they have beyond just whistleblower protections. And I just wanted to flag those resources for your listeners, because this is a very complex area of the law.
Liz Hempowitz is Director of Public Policy at the Project on Government Oversight. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Find links to more information and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.